Mandela Bay Qabega?
Why NMB and why now?
I think there's no better way of telling you how broken Nelson Mandela Bay is, other than the fact that for the past month, there has been no municipal phone line. 1.3 million people, a budget of 22 billion rand, and they can't keep the phone lines on. If we are serious about changing the fortunes of this country, if we want to fix this country, if we want to get it working again, we have to roll up our sleeves, all of us, whether you're a politician or whether you're civic society, and we have to get stuck in. I always say, are you going to allow your street, your neighborhood, your community to go to rack and ruin just because you've had an incompetent municipality? No.
Yebo.
We have Ratih Gwerendal.
Yebo.
In the house from Nelson Mandela Bay, Qabega. What's up? Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's lovely being here. Nelson Mandela Bay, the friendly city, the city with 300 days of sunshine and not as much wind as the rest of the country want you to believe.
That is not true. That's a lie. First lie.
What lie?
No,
absolutely not.
Not even 100 days in office.
We're not the windy city. We're the friendly city.
It's windy. I can never wear a dress in that place because God knows I'm a...
wearing a dress now?
There are
going to
be blessings everywhere in the country. But Ratih, we know you. We're sitting here. We're having a chat with you. We know you love Qabega and you think the wind is kosher. But to people in South Africa who don't know Ratih, who named you and why are you Ratih?
Well, my mother and father named me. I was born and bred in Nelson Mandela Bay, and I went to school there, and I also studied at Nelson Mandela University. I became a counselor at the age 26, one of the youngest counselors ever in Nelson Mandela Bay at that stage. And I also started my practice fairly young. I'm an attorney by trade and I still practice. I believe that it's very important for politicians to have a life outside of politics, although it's becoming more and more difficult to practice. That practice is bleeding at the moment because I don't have time to get to most of the work. But I've always lived in Nelson Mandela Bay, and I meant what I said. You know, we've got such an amazing city with such amazing potential. It is a city that's got one of the most moderate climates in the world, 300 days of sunshine. Yes, it does have a little bit of wind, but that just helps to cool us down sometimes.
But I mean, tell us about your upbringing. How was your time as a young man in Nelson Mandela Bay?
Well, you know, I think I had fairly strict parents, and I went to school quite close to my house in Algoa Park. And
what was school like for you?
School was, I think I was a bit of a nerd.
So I liked school.
I was a bit of an academic, and so I didn't play as much sports in primary school I did later on in secondary school, but in high school. But I really enjoyed studying, and now that my kids are in primary school, I encourage them to study harder, and I remind them I should have studied
harder. To be fair, Ratih, if I can just jump in here a little bit, I'm always a little bit wary of people whose job is described as a practice. I mean, how often do you have to practice before you get it right?
Get the practice.
Well, I should be practicing more. I think that was the point.
But, because the practice is bleeding.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But I think it's very important for any politician to have experience to the outside world. And my wife, Annie, you know,
we've been
married for 15 years, my better half. She would probably say long-suffering wife. You know,
we'll have a chat with her.
Often said to me that there must be a time that you must possibly go back into the practice full-time because politics is onerous, and very often I'm not at home, and very often I'm the absent parent, not being able to go to rugby games, to recitals, or to prize givings. And that's the sacrifices that politicians sometimes give. But I don't think we want to feel sorry for politicians, but we do want to feel sorry for politicians' partners, because it's not easy to be a partner.
Whenever I'm in discussions with people who've been in politics for quite a long time, such as yourself and the work you've done, I always want to know, was there a Damascus moment? Was there something that happened where you thought, this is why I have to go into politics, or this has given me the go-ahead, this is why I'm going to do this?
Mm-hmm. So the funny thing is that as long as I can remember, back in high school, I always knew I was going to be an attorney and I was going to be a city councillor. And that happened after I became a member of the junior city council. And I enjoyed that very much so. And I thought, well, look at our city. I want to contribute to the running of the city. Mm. And obviously didn't realise that, you know, some people at that stage already saw it as a job. I thought I was going to be an attorney and then a volunteer and try and make a difference. And as soon as I got to varsity, I started getting actively involved in our local branch. And I had so much fun as a student in the DA. I mean, you know, we've never had a lot of money as a party. Mm. And therefore, a lot of the work needs to be done by people in the DA. And I remember, Karaba, how many posters I put up. But way back when we didn't have money for cable ties, we had to use wire.
Sure.
And
I put up hard wire.
Chicken wire.
I put up thousands of posters, but we had so much fun as students getting involved, working towards ensuring that we can improve our communities and furthering the DA cause.
Okay, so let's talk about the attorney part, because I'm very interested. So what cases do you usually focus on? Do you have a field that is your niche, or is it any case and we're good?
So very early in my practicing life, I realized that I wouldn't be able to be a public rep and then also be able to do court work or litigation. So I turned it into a bit of a pen pusher's practice, you know, where we do estates, contracts, conveyancing. And so it's very much a pen pusher's practice.
Okay, so essentially life is fun. We are here to do the legal things, but we're not taking you to jail yet. life is still okay.
But Karaba, you know, there's this famous story of when Retief first started. He was in the police cells.
And in the what?
In the police cells.
Okay.
And the police were asking him questions.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm not going to speak without my lawyer present.
Are you?
And they said to him, you are a lawyer. And he said, exactly, where's my present?
That's going to be the snippet everybody's going to get. Retief was in jail.
And like, you wanted a present in jail.
Ex-prisoner, now DA, mayoral candidate.
Wants a present in prison. But wait, what were you doing in prison?
Visiting a client.
What happened there?
So let me just go for a second back. I mean, I you touched briefly on your wife, but I would love to hear, you know, how did you meet? You know, how did that start? Was it on university? Was it something else? Talk to us about her.
So we actually high school sweethearts, and and we were together for about 3 years when unfortunately, she left me and decided that I'm taking too long to get my degree.
Wow.
And I begged, but she didn't want to take me back.
Yeah.
But there was a happy ending to that story, because about 2 years after that, our paths crossed again.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been together ever since, married for 15 years, got 3 beautiful children who no doubt, looks-wise, take after her. But yeah, Ludik, Lian and Luca. Our little third one is a little girl. If Luca was the first one, we probably wouldn't only have one.
She's enough.
I think girls are far more difficult to raise than boys.
Actually, some parents say otherwise. I wouldn't know, because I'm still scared to have children.
It's the most amazing
thing. And what do you do? I mean, what do you do outside of politics? I mean, what's sort of the hobbies that you have to keep you sane?
What do you mean outside of politics? I work. I work hard. No.
So, look,
I think everybody in the party, or a lot of people in the party, know that I'm a braai master. So I relax around the braai. I'm quite creative. I spend a lot of time with my kids hiking, going to the beach, fishing, those type of things.
And what is your favorite thing to braai?
My favorite thing, well, my favorite thing to make on the braai is actually a poiki, which is a South African legend.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I am an absolute master.
We want to see this master.
Yeah, we want to.
Preparing an oxtail pot.
Ooh, okay.
So, nice. Yeah.
So, a lot of a thick body, full bodied wine.
Yes, absolutely.
And carrots, celery, onions,
corn.
Not so much celery. I mean,
he's focused.
But the wine.
He knows the wine and the meat.
Well, you guys know that Helen was on the program, Common's Braai, Celebrity Braai.
Yes, she's
got good context there. I think maybe we should throw Retief's name into the hat.
Put the skills
get you
to a test.
There, yeah.
Do you want to see this?
And do you sometimes enter like poiki kus competitions in NMB?
No, I don't. But I judged one the other day.
Okay.
Yeah,
how did that go?
It went brilliantly. Can you imagine? I mean, that was work for me on that Saturday. There were like 10 different poikis that I had to judge. And I mean, presentations was wonderful. The food was absolutely amazing. And it was the best job for the day that you could find in NMB.
That's
amazing. Do you think there's a market there economic-wise for NMB to grow its economy and be able to see more injections, the food industry? Do you think there's an opportunity there to turn it around?
Well, absolutely. I think that one of the low-hanging fruits insofar as job creation for Nelson Mandela Bay, and we'll get into that a little bit later, would be the tourism industry. I think we all know the Eastern Cape has got tremendous potential. We scenically a beautiful, beautiful province. Mm. Nelson Mandela Bay is a very affordable a destination, and it really has. I mean, it's the third time I'm saying this, but it really has 300 days of sunshine here. Go and Google it.
If anybody wants to take anything out of this podcast, 300 days of sunshine in Nelson Mandela Bay.
So it has got a very moderate climate, and it's a very affordable city to visit. Mm. 40 kilometers of unspoiled beaches, and therefore, obviously, a very, very unique destination to visit, especially for local South Africans. Mm. We've got some great restaurants in Nelson Mandela Bay, very affordable restaurants.
Yeah.
I know there's other parts in the country. You go up to Gauteng. I'm not going to say
be
Cape
careful.
Town. Go to
Tread
Johannesburg.
Carefully, we're hosting you.
Well, Kuraba was just scared. I was going to say there's expensive restaurants in Cape Town. I will never say that. You're hosting me at this.
Yeah,
day.
Be careful.
Well, so I think you sold us all. I mean, we were going on holiday to NB
absolutely.
Then, in December.
Bags.
Staying at your place.
You can afford a five star hotel, but I'll make the poiki.
Yeah. Tell me, Retief, I know that politicians work sort of 26 out of every 24 hours, but what do you do? What is downtime for Retief?
I think downtime is absolutely spending some time with my family, spending time with Annie, being able to just sit there. We've got a rule, by the way, and the rule is no politics at home. I'm allowed to tell Annie something about my day, but the moment I start talking politics or we invite friends over for a braai or a poiki and we start talking politics, she gets very upset because she says it does become all consuming.
Yes.
And just spending time with my family, spending time with the kids. I realized the other day Ludic is turned 13, so I basically only have 5 years with him. Then he'll go to university, hopefully. So you need to make that family time count. Mm. You want to create memories with them and make them experience life.
Mm. What would you say is your favorite thing about being a dad?
So there's a song in Afrikaans. It was by the late Guy Koorsten that said, Papa maak die reg, which roughly equates to father makes it right. The father fixes it. And I always used to play that for my kids, you know, saying that everybody comes to to me with their problems. Papa maak het reg.
And then campaigning even then.
Papa maak het reg. Papa maak het reg. But then Luca, when she was about four, got it wrong. And she said, Papa is te sleg.
What did you do, actually?
You can just laugh.
Service delivery slowed down.
Slowed down at the stadium and we're like, no.
Well, I think you just gave yourself a new campaign slogan.
Yeah.
Papa maak het reg.
I mean, like, Retief maak het reg.
Retief maak het reg.
Yeah, it's actually really cool.
I like that, yes, yeah.
So, I mean, 21 years since you joined the DA, you know, why NMB and why now?
So, I mean, obviously I'm born and bred there, but that city has got such significance, I think, in to South Africa. And I think that the Eastern Cape, sadly, unfortunately, still has a lot of problems, which has been exacerbated by very bad management, bad leadership over the last couple of decades. We're still the poorest province in the country. We've got one of the lowest GDP per capita right there in Nelson Mandela Bay, one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. And South Africa is one of the most, well, is the most unequal society in the world. So I would go so far as to say that if we've got one of the highest unemployment rates and we live in a country with the most inequality, then we're probably one of the poorest cities in the world. And I think, you know, considering what I've mentioned about the prospects of Nelson Mandela Bay, the fact that it's actually a lovely place to live, it's a 20-minute city, you know, you never get stuck in traffic there. It is worth saving. It has got so much potential to be the next big thing. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that holds Nelson Mandela Bay back is the fact that it's got leaders that does not care about the future of the city, but more importantly, the future of their residents. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've become almost the poster child for what bad governance can do to a city. Mm-hmm. I think earlier, and we can discuss this a little bit later, mm-hmm. how in Nelson Mandela Bay, it's not the lack of funding that is making it impossible to deliver services or to upgrade our infrastructure. It's the fact that we have had a brain drain from officials that all wanted out of that administration because they could no longer stand the chaos. Mm. So we've got the money, we just don't have the people that can get the city working.
When you say we, you obviously mean Nelson Mandela Bay.
Yes,
because I'm thinking, I'm like, am I guilty?
Is this me?
Am I the problem? Certainly not the DA.
Is my tanga gonna stop? Gonna call my name?
I think the point that you make there, Retief, and as former Free Staters, I'm sure Karaba will.
I'm still a current Free Stater order.
Yes, that this is happening in so many places. Mm. You know, I know that in the Eastern Cape, the challenges are far more advanced, but I think there's a Nelson Mandela Bay in every province that is being mismanaged by the ANC. It is being badly run into the ground, that the service delivery has got to a point where you look and say, can we drag it back? Can we pull it back? But your experience is you have been in a position where you did start to pull it back. You have been in a position where you saw what is wrong and you know how to fix it. Obviously, that came to an abrupt end, but you've been there, you've seen what can be done, and that must be quite inspiring because you know how it can be fixed.
Mm. Well, Richard, I always say that fixing government or running a government is not rocket science. Mm. You just need to ensure that you adhere to basic principles. Mm. For example, when you try and fix finances of a municipality, there's a three rules to that. Mm. Firstly, make sure that nobody steals from you. Mm. Secondly, make sure that those that can afford to pay. And thirdly, make sure that when you procure services, you get value for money. Mm. And that's sort of like the basic guidelines in the private sector as well. Mm. And the only difference between the private sector company and that municipality whose finances you're trying to fix is the fact that there must be a social safety net for the poor, which is a constitutional obligation and which is funded by national government. That's the only difference. But if you adhere to those three basic principles, you can go and basically turn around the finances of even some of your smallest municipalities. Mm. But it's because leaders waste money they appoint incompetent officials that are corrupt and connected to corrupt politicians that wants to loot from the state. That's why we don't have sufficient money to service our communities.
But I mean, so, go for it.
Yeah, so first, I want us, before we go back to talking about the mess that we're in, right, that you just detailed, I want us to just go back. You were mayor. You had an opportunity to deliver services and change the lives of your constituents there. And then, jiggy, you were cut abruptly and had to move forward. But what did you leave behind that we can look back to and use as a source of strength for why we want you back in that seat?
Mm. Well, I think there's a couple of examples that I can use. But, you know, first of all, I would say that in the financial year 2020-2021, the city managed to build only, and this is a metro municipality with 1.3 million people nearly, managed to only build 27 RDP houses. And the rest of the funding was sent back to National Treasury. Sure. The financial year after that, the city managed to build only 28 houses. They did one better.
One better.
And again, sent more than 180 million rand in top structure grant back to National Treasury. But in our financial year, we managed to get human settlements working again. Mm. And we built 450 houses.
Well done.
And didn't return a cent back.
Yeah.
We also managed to get the
From 28 to 400 in just a year.
450, yes.
Wow. Sure.
Yeah, so, you know, it can be done. It's not rocket science. Mm. But you need to understand what is wrong with government in order to fix it. You need to understand that you need to provide proper oversight and give proper leadership. Mm. And I think one of the best examples is probably the fact that we achieved the first unqualified audit opinion in 12 years in that city for the period that we govern. Mm. Now, unqualified or clean audit's not the beginning and end all, but it does indicate that you are governing well and that you're managing your finances well and that there is deliverable in terms of service
level. I want us to park there because many times ordinary South Africans always ask, what does a clean audit mean? How does it affect service delivery?
Yeah.
And why does it matter to my everyday inhale and exhale? Mm. So break it down. When a city gets a clean audit, what does that really mean?
So when there is a qualified audit opinion, then there's something materially wrong with either your financials or
what you submitted.
You know, something that they can't verify. Mm. When you've got
meaning, if you said you were going to spend 500 rand towards filling potholes,
but
you spent that 500, but nobody knows where it went because the pothole is
or
not filled.
Or you've awarded a contract irregularly to somebody.
Sure.
So there could be potential collusion and fraud, and that can then be highlighted. Mm-hmm. Unqualified opinion is when everything you've said can be verified. There can still be issues of concern that the Auditor General highlights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But generally speaking, you're not trying to mislead the Auditor General.
Yeah.
And there's good governance principles that are being adhered to. Mm. And I said it's not the beginning and end all because what matters to the people is what should matter to all of us, is service delivery.
Yeah.
But you do want to know that your money is being spent
on
what it's meant for.
Yeah.
And that is why it's so important to get at least an unqualified opinion. Mm-hmm. When you move to a clean audit, which is the best that you can get, that means that you've actually dealt with all of the issues that the Auditor General has actually highlighted over the years.
Yeah.
And that's the very best of municipalities.
I mean, I should say also that, you know, when you get a clean audit, it's also that when you have found irregularities in your system and you have proactively
dealt with them,
dealt with them and actually brought them to the Auditor General to say, listen, we found this irregularity.
How do we fix it?
Yeah, we are giving you that information. We're not hiding it from you.
Mm.
We're not saying, oh, you know, trying to spin it. Mm. The municipality and the leadership is actually coming forward with that information, and that gives you also, you know, a clean audit as well.
I think, sorry, to come in on that, just to sort of bring a bit of balance here, because you'll remember that Cyril Ramaphosa, the president, tried to backtrack after he said that municipalities are brilliant. And he was saying, no, you know, clean audits are not the everything it's made out to be, and Retief focused on that point. And that is only to the extent that sometimes in an emergency when you need to help people in a disaster situation or whatever, you can't stick to all the rules to help them.
Sure.
Yeah. So you have to get deviations and you have to have things changed to help them.
Mm.
But back to the point of your clean audit shows at least, or your qualified, unqualified audit shows that you are doing everything you can.
Yes.
And a clean audit is something to aim for.
Absolutely.
But if you need to deviate, you do.
But you don't deviate every month, every year, and
there
that's why you can't. Because we have so many... I want to bring you in here, Riti, because you have so many municipalities in South Africa where there are material misstatements, there is no alignment with... between the expenditure and the report and the deliverables, all of those things. And there's always somebody who's going to say, yeah, but there was an emergency and we had to get a deviation and all of those other things, which we know is BS code for corruption and siphoning funds out of the system, right? But what I want to bring you in is after you left, you were able to not only deliver from 28 houses to 450 houses in 1 year, which is you didn't have to go to church and pray for 40 nights and 40 days to get that right.
The money was there.
The money was there. You just had to know how to spend it and what to do it. And you had the will, right?
Yep.
What happened when you left?
Well, it's a very sad story, and I think everybody in Nelson Mandela Bay knows this story. One of our coalition partners stabbed us in the back and we lost the city.
Who's this?
Gary van Niekerk from the Northern Alliance, which is a local party.
Okay.
And sadly, he became the executive mayor at that stage. And they reverted back to a qualified audit opinion for the year that directly after. So now we're back to where we started. But even worse is in the 2 years after we've left, the city has lost nearly R1 billion in grant funding to National Treasury because of an inability to spend it.
Sure. So in Tembisa, you have corruption worth R2 billion of people just stealing money. In Nelson Mandela Bay, you have half of that R1 billion just going back to Treasury because nobody knows how to spend it.
Yeah. And the sad thing, Karaba, is that here you're sitting with, as I've started this conversation, to say one of the poorest metros in the world. And you need to keep every cent in that city.
Absolutely.
Make sure that you invest it in infrastructure. Make sure that your contractors have work. Make sure that you have an economy that is supported by good, sound infrastructure, because no business wants to invest in a municipality where infrastructure is collapsing.
Yeah.
And you're sending this money back to Treasury because you can't spend
on
it.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, so I think it's a very valuable point you're making, because the other issue that's also troubling Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality is its municipal managers.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've had so many in so many years. You know, can you touch on that for us so that we can understand that better?
Well, I mean, thank you. Luckily, you're sitting. We've had 47 municipal managers since
47
since 2009. It equates roughly to one every quarter or one every 4 months. So it is absolutely ridiculous. And we've had about seven coalitions and mayors since 2016. And you can imagine the kind of chaos. If you think about your line manager or the owner of a business, if you had to have a new boss or new manager every 4 months, the kind of chaos that there will be in your institution.
That's
so I was doing maths. I heard all of that. Like 40, I was going back in like 5 year terms. So you had 2021. That was the municipal elections. Before that, it was 2016. And then before 2016,
2011.
It was 2011.
Yeah.
So, and then 2009 is two years before. So those are three government terms. Like 5 year terms, you ran 47.
Yeah. So, and the kind of chaos that creates is a perfect space for looting.
Yeah.
So, and this you must understand, this we must all understand, that nobody can loot from a government where things work.
Mm.
Therefore, certain politicians try and create chaos in the administration. Try and cause instability within council. Mm. Because where there's chaos, it's easier to facilitate state capture. Yeah. It's easier to facilitate looting. And we've seen it in Nelson Mandela Bay. I'm going to give you a figure that's going to shock you. Mm. Nelson Mandela Bay is number one for having the most irregular expenditure on its financial statements. In fact, 22 billion rand in irregular expenditure. Irregular expenditure is when you obviously have incurred expenditure outside of supply chain regulations and you fell of the MFMA, which governs how you must spend budgets and finances.
The things that require forensic reports.
Yes. Yeah. So let that sink in and you understand that the chaos that we've had in council with all these mayors and all the city managers that they were equated to all of this irregular expenditure. And then two and two makes four.
But where are they, Rajiv?
Who are they?
Yeah.
Who are these people?
And where are they? Have they been recycled into the system, classic ANC cater style? Where are they?
Yes, absolutely. That's what often happens. Somebody comes in and just walks out, is given a golden handshake. Our current city manager has been sitting at home for the past 20 months, earning 250,000 rand a month. Yes.
Say that again.
Suspended.
Spending how much a month?
250,000 rand a month. That's a lot of money. That equates to an RDP house per month. You know, that's the value of that.
And it's so salary.
And she's been sitting at home for 20 months. She's been suspended, and now council the other day considered giving her a golden handshake. And luckily, the item it was about to be considered. The item was withdrawn by the mayor, and you know, this is a state of governance by the ANC.
Why was she suspended?
Because of some irregular contracts within the municipality. She's also facing criminal charges.
Why is she not fired? I don't know. Like, explain it to an ordinary person. Why is she suspended, still earning 250,000 rand every month for 20 months for doing fuck all sitting at home?
Karabo, because I think that, again, nothing in that municipality works, like in so many other municipalities. The disciplinary boards don't work. So it takes years
to actually get
people through the system. Then they raise all sorts of exceptions, and the fact that they are being prejudiced by the fact that it's being dragged out. And it's all by design very often, because there's a politician connected to this one, perhaps, and trying to delay the process. And therefore, you sit with a number of these officials. And that is not just true in Nelson Mandela Bay. I believe it happens elsewhere in the country as well. And look at what happens in the private sector. If you have serious charges against you, the process must run its course, and they'll get rid of you within a relatively short period of time.
But the other challenge is we have to remember that the DA is a party of the rule of law. So we have to have disciplinary hearings that are instituted and have to be concluded.
Yeah. And fair.
So it's unfair.
But as frustrating as it is, we can't have these corrupt individuals just walking away from a disciplinary hearing, and everyone says,
Scott-free,
okay, that's fine.
With a handshake.
Because then they pop up at the next place, and the next place, and the next place. There's a guy called Valentina, I think, in the Free State. He's been municipal manager in about seven different places.
Everybody in the Free State.
Yeah, and he should have been fired from the very first one and blacklisted.
Yeah.
But we as a party, because we believe in the rule of law, we can't just say, okay, fire that person, fire that person, fire that person. Yeah. There has to be a process, but the frustration comes in with the process. Yes. And I think that is probably a massive challenge for you and other people in your place to get the administration to actually drive these processes to a conclusion.
Well, absolutely. And I think that sometimes you get so frustrated that you want to settle these matters to try and just get these officials out of the system. But as you say, I mean, that is the worst decisions that can be made. One needs to try and finalize these issues, get them expedited, and make sure that there's no political interference. And that is something that is so important. I experienced in our coalition, which was a 10-party coalition, let me tell you, It is very, very difficult to govern in a 10-party coalition. Somebody said to me, how do you govern a 10-party coalition?
Like I
said, you just spend half of your time governing. The other time, you spend managing a coalition, you know, and any decision that needs to be taken needs to be consulted on. And
that's why we need an outright DA majority.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So important. But even in that 10-party coalition, I often had to say to my coalition partners, be careful, because now what you're doing is you are trying to interfere in the administration. You can't be the shop steward for that specific official. Mm. Let the process unfold and stay away. And I think, you know, we've seen very often how our politicians get involved. And case in point, we spoke about Mr. Gary van Niekerk, who was part of our coalition. It sat me in the back. He invited me to his 50th birthday party. No, when he was still the speaker and I was still the mayor. And I was sitting at this party.
Did you get him a gift?
Yes, I think I did. And
we should have had a chat about what to get
him. I should actually go and take it back. No, it wasn't a knife.
A bandage.
That stuck in my back. But I sat there and in walks a suspended official. In walks a suspended official to attend the same birthday party of a politician. Lord. Now, you know, there should be clear separation.
Absolutely.
Between politicians and officials.
But officials are actually the handlers of the politicians.
Yeah. Well, this is what
happens. In most cases, because even with the suspended MM who's earning 250,000 rand,
you're never going to forget that.
I'm never forgetting it. I'm so upset. That's so much money. So, like...
But back to your coalition.
So the point I'm making is I was so upset I needed to breathe. So the case with... You would find that with that suspended MM, that... It's dragging so long because she's just a handler figure of a syndicate of corrupt ANC in most cases. I'm almost willing to bet my last 5 cents on it, who are now being protected and using her as a scapegoat. And like we've seen with the CETAs in higher education, she's going to move on after getting her golden handshake and is going to go be appointed as a chairperson of a CETA board or an administrator. Like we've seen with Obangwane, who moved from Mfuleni and Jiggy Jiggy. He's now all of a sudden managing billions of rands of South Africa's money. It's a culture that is so interesting, It's in the bloodstreams of how the ANC thinks and in every corner of administration that we genuinely, when we get into government, Radif, have to work before you can even deliver services.
Yeah.
You first need to scrape out all the rot and detox the system of all of these corrupt people before you can get anywhere.
But the issue
is
some of the smaller popcorn parties have the same thing. They're only in it for power and position. I mean, Gait McKenzie has said as much on a number of occasions.
Oh, yeah. And he shows
that's
it to
another
us
story, Gait. Yeah. Anyway, has he resigned yet? Do you know? Because Kenny's not back.
He says he's
not
going to resign. He says he's
retracted the resignation. Yeah.
He made a threat, got what he wanted, and now he's like, okay, moving on.
But quite often there's the problem where people come and say they want power and position. So they will change their ideological standpoint based on how much they're being offered.
There's no principle.
So this is why the threshold legislation is so important. And I know there are a lot of talks and details being discussed at levels different to what we normally operate in about that. But it's critical that we get this threshold legislation in, because
100%.
I think in your case where you had a 10-party coalition, if there had been a threshold legislation, you would have had a 6-party coalition or a 5-party coalition, which immediately starts making it look better. And as we've seen from what Helen Ziller did in Cape Town when she was faced with a massive coalition, you bring those people into the fold, they become with you, they join you, and that's how you get your majorities if you don't get an outright majority. But we can't be going into 10-party coalitions.
No, absolutely.
It's
not destined to fail.
No, it's absolutely unsustainable. And you know, very often many of these parties get elected on a fraction. So I know that there are people, some of the parties that were elected in Nelson Mandela Bay with 1,800 votes, and some of them are sitting on the mayoral committee overseeing overseeing departments with billions of rands, overseeing departments where thousands of people are actually employed. And that has led to the city being so dysfunctional. And that's a story, sadly, we can see in so many other municipalities. But, you know, I think there's no better way of telling you how broken Nelson Mandela Bay is, other than the fact that for the past month, there's been no municipal phone lines.
Sure.
They haven't paid the account. There's a dispute with a contractor, service provider. And if you're a resident in Nelson Mandela Bay at the moment, the only way you can log a service delivery query, other than maybe via email, is to phone your ward councillor. The call centre of the municipality has been offline for 50 days.
What?
This is a city, not some small, I want to say, one-horse town. I'm not going to say in the Free State.
I heard you. And
but 1.3 million people, a budget of 22 billion rand, and they can't keep the phone lines on.
I know this is live. Can we test that? Can you call the call center now and let's see if they do pick up or if it's actually offline? It's so insane.
Yeah, I'm interested to know the people.
Shall we try this?
Yeah, try it.
Okay. So,
hold the closer to the mic. The people who are responsible for answering the lines, they're getting paid. What are they getting paid to do if the lines are not working?
Well, not for answering your telephones at the moment.
Let's hear. So what's the number?
It's 0800 20 50 50.
Please put it on speaker.
And we're going to put it on speaker. There we go.
Closer to the mic.
Ish. In South Africa, our land.
There we go.
Are you for real? Like, it doesn't even go through.
It doesn't even go through.
Try it again.
Try again. No, try it again.
Yeah, sometimes they're busy.
No, but I have been trying it.
They might be busy, Retief.
No, they're definitely not busy. I know this for a fact.
They may be talking to someone. Like,
there we go.
0800
20 50 50. I put it on speaker.
Hold it on top of the microphone. Like, yeah, just on top there.
Oh, gosh. I can't.
So, I mean, this is the impact that corruption, poor management has on service delivery, right?
Absolutely.
And so I want to hear your plan for this. I want to hear, as the mayoral candidate of Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality, what is your plan to fix that?
Well, I think we are just going back to basics. I know it sounds like a cliche, but I said earlier it's not rocket science to run a municipality. And we are going to focus on three basics subjects, you know, the one being service delivery, the other being making sure that we create a safer city, and then making sure that we grow our economy. And I think firstly, you have to start by ensuring that you get an administration that functions, making sure that you fill the top management. There are currently 7 of the 10 executive director positions are vacant. They have been for 2 years. So nobody takes decisions. They are acting positions that are filled every 3 months. So you fill those positions with hardworking, ethical, uncorruptible officials.
Professionals, yeah.
Then you appoint, and of course, a city manager, and one that will see out his or her term for 5 years, not one that's stuck in this revolving door in City Hall. Yeah. And then, as mayor, you and political leaders and as council, you hold those officials to account. You make sure that there are absolutely no corruption. You review tenders. You make sure that where there are blockages in the system, you unblock those blockages. You know, one of the questions I was asked by a journalist a while ago was said to me, Retief, you refer to this 900 million rand that the city has lost over the last 2 years. Why didn't you guys lose so much money? What is what's the secret?
Yeah.
And I said, can I explain it this way? It is making sure that there's proper oversight. So, for example, there is a 50 million rand contract in your department of which you provide oversight on. And you see that for a month, there's been no movement in that project. No spending.
Armed, yeah.
You pick up the phone, you phone the project manager, you say, listen, why not spending money? Is there a holdup? Mm. Yes, sir, there is. We haven't got a service level agreement.
Mm.
Where's the service level agreement? It's at legal services. You pick up the phone, you phone legal services, you say, why is the project manager for such and such project waiting for that service level agreement for the past 2 months? It will be done by tomorrow, close of business. Then you follow up the day after.
Mm.
Project manager, did you receive the SLA? Mm. Yes, we did.
Can you
now proceed? Yes, we can. And that is how politicians should be providing oversight over their specific departments.
Mm.
This whole mess with cell phones and landline telephones not being paid in the municipality for a month.
Mm.
You've got an executive mayor with executive powers in Nelson Mandela Bay overseeing a 22 billion rand budget, which she has direct oversight over because the budget is normally entrusted to a mayor, as we know.
Yeah.
And she does nothing to resolve the issue. Can you honestly tell me that in a month's time, you cannot get a call center line up and running?
Sure.
Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. But anyway, I've been digressing.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that I think that is the key issue, making sure that you've got competent officials providing oversight, filling key vacancies, like the fact that there's vacancies for about 62 engineers in Nelson Mandela Bay. Our last electrical engineer resigned about a week ago. And
do you know how many engineers we have sitting at home who would love that opportunity?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there are many engineers that tells me that government actually pays better than the private sector pays, unless you've got your own consultancy. So there's many people that can be appointed. Mm-hmm. Fill those vacancies for engineers. Fill the vacancies for plumbers. Fill the vacancies for electricians. Make sure that your artisans are there.
Mm-hmm.
You look at a department like the Electricity and Energy Department. This is another shocker that I'm going to give you.
No, I've had enough, Retief.
I'm
shocked enough.
Last financial year, Nelson Mandela Bay, for the first time in the history of the city, paid Eskom more than what it brought in through electricity sales.
Wow.
Bulk electricity cost more than what we brought in from all the sales from our customers, 700 million rand more. And if you work, bring into equation the other expenses of running that department, the department ran at a 1.3 billion rand loss for the financial year.
Now you want 1.3
billion
loss.
Yes.
Okay, break this down.
Sure.
You have a budget every financial year
yes.
that's allocated to different departments in alignment with different service delivery outcomes.
Mm.
If you don't spend that money in the right place or you overspend it on hogwash, then it means the service delivery outcome is not there, one.
Mm.
Or two, if it's met and you could have had an opportunity to divert it to somebody else, you just took how many? 1.8
billion?
1.3 billion. 1.3 billion down the drain.
Yes.
For neat.
Yes. So in order to make sure that department breaks even, the ratepayers and residents of Nelson Mandela Bay had to fork out 1.3 billion rand to let it break even. Now, if you want to bankrupt a municipality or a city, that's the fastest way of doing it.
Rajiv, I think I read somewhere on TikTok that 2 billion rands is 100,000 rand every day for 54 years. 100,000 rands every day for 54 rands. So that's 2 billion. So that's pretty much that for like just 50 years.
Yeah.
Because that's 1.3 billion rands.
Yeah.
How do you get that right?
Through mismanagement.
In 1 year.
But have we become numb to these numbers?
I think we have.
We hear about 2 billion here at Tembisa Hospital and 1.3 billion here.
I don't think
we appreciate what a billion is. And
no, we don't.
Most South Africans will never be able to see a million rand in their life.
Never.
Absolutely.
And here we're talking about thousands of millions at any given time. And you know, the reality is that other electricity departments, like the city of Cape Town, they actually make a very healthy profit, a profit that gets put into the municipality to build further infrastructure. Not in Nelson Mandela Bay. There we have to bail them out. Yeah. And I foresee that if the city is unable to turn that department around very soon, that in 3 financial years, Nelson Mandela Bay will be bankrupt. And I think it's not difficult to, you don't need a crystal ball to see that because the reality is the figures speak for themselves. You can't run at a 1.3 billion rand loss. If you if you overspent your salary, Karabo, every month by 20%, what do you do? You can maybe go and try and borrow money or go in an overdraft, but eventually the bank will say, Karabo,
there's no more
to borrow. You're out of money. And that's exactly what's happening with Nelson Mandela Bay. And of course, you know, one of our biggest challenges that we have in Nelson Mandela Bay, it's our single biggest challenge, is job creation. And making sure that we create an enabling environment for business to thrive. But the reality is that no business will invest. Where you've got a municipality with collapsing services.
Sure.
But you'll change that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we have changed that. When we governed, I think you would remember, we were amidst a 100-year drought, one of the most intense droughts on history. In history, and we took over the city. Some of our dams were down to below 10%, and I remember that getting there, that the former administration didn't pay heed to Department of Water and Sanitation directives, which meant they said that the city should extract less from their dams because there's water restrictions, and the city just ignored it. In fact, on the Crom line, which is the Churchill and the Impofu dams, they extracted 3 days equivalent on one day, every day. And it became almost a mathematical certainty that we were going to run dry and become the first metro or metropolis in the world that ran partially out of water. And so I came in, and one of the most difficult decisions I had to make was to say, listen, stop over-extracting our dams. But that meant that every day there would have been communities that were going to sit with water. And what did I do? I became the sole spokesperson on drought. And I was just very transparent and honest with our voters and our residents. And I said to our residents that, guys, if we don't extract less, we're going to deplete the dams. If we deplete the dams,
then we're
it is end of the line for Nelson Mandela Bay. No business can thrive if they haven't got water. And those difficult decisions, coupled with the fact that we actually made sure that we fast-tracked all the drought mitigation and water augmentation projects, meant that we could cut back on our daily water consumption, and we bought time. And then, of course, the heavens sent the rain. God sent us rain, and the rest is history. We overcame that drought in which everybody, including Department of Water and Sanitation, thought that we were going to run dry, and we didn't. Because we took the difficult decisions and inform the public to say that this is a necessary evil. Nobody, no politician wants to leave anybody without water, do any form of water shedding. But the alternative was so ghastly to contemplate that was the only decision. So sometimes I think it's also very important to illustrate that the Democratic Alliance don't take popular decisions. Sometimes they take the unpopular decisions. What is in the in the best interest of our people and the best interest of our cities and municipalities?
I want to hone in there, right? Because in order for you to be decisive as a leader and to see the outcomes of your decisiveness, the number of coalition partners you have also matters. Because if you have an outright majority in a government, then Retief can be decisive and deliver. But if you have a 10-party coalition, then as decisive as Retief Odendaal is as a mayor and the Democratic Alliance's banner, you still have to go appease Richard, Donovan, and Karabo, and you may not even get there. So I want us to have a chat with the people of Nelson Mandela Bay about the importance of voting for the big fish players and the Democratic Alliance and the danger of voting for small parties.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously it's everybody's democratic right to vote for who they want. But there's really only two options in South Africa to vote for. And that is the ANC or the DA. Because those are the only two governments you get, or a version of those, meaning that either a coalition with the ANC or a coalition with the DA. And the fact of the matter is, if the DA doesn't get an outright majority, it might get a DA coalition and might get some coalition partners. But there's no guarantee that that coalition is going to last, like what's happened in Nelson Mandela Bay, which your coalition partners stab you in the back, and then before you know, you've got an ANC coalition. And we all know that the ANC can't govern. And we've seen their track record. Even Cyril Ramaphosa says that the DA governs municipalities better. And therefore, it is so important to look at a party that's got a track record of good governance. And I'm not saying that we're perfect. We also make mistakes. We all know that. But when you compare DA governance and delivery to ANC governance and delivery, it's chalk and cheese. You can't compare the two. And I think we got a lot of people excited in Nelson Mandela Bay over a short period of time where we didn't manage to turn the municipality around overnight, because it takes years to rebuild a broken down state institutional municipality. But they could see that we were making movement, that we were making progress, and that we were moving in the right direction in terms of delivery. And I think that a lot of people in Nelson Mandela Bay also realized that the only way out of this mess, also the only way out of our unemployment mess, is to vote for a party that can create a stable environment where council can thrive, where the municipality can thrive, and where business want to invest, because business don't invest where chaos reigns.
So when you were in power, like you're saying now, when you were in government, all right, you got things done, you showed people you got things done, strong leadership, decisive leadership. But isn't that what you're doing now? Because you're going out and you're saying, this is how we can do it. This is how we can fix things. Retief looking like a Free State farmer in his shorts and he's out there, the sun beating on his head. But he's out there and he's fixing potholes and he's making a change. And then people, even though we're not in government yet, again in Nelson Mandela Bay, and I say yet because it's coming, he can see, here's Retief, who everyone knows. He's been there his entire life. He's been the mayor. They recognize him. They know him. They trust him. And here he is, in his shorts, still filling delivering a pothole, still delivering. So that is this part of a strategy, Retief?
I think that South Africans as a whole, everywhere, is just gutful of politics. They want to get things done. They want to see progress. And that's the kind of attitude that we have. We we say, well, we can talk about what's wrong in Nelson Mandela Bay, or we can try and do things ourselves. Now, it's not sustainable, you know, because it's often DA-funded initiatives. And the DA doesn't have government money. That municipality has got 22 billion rand and they waste a lot of it, and they send a lot of it unspent back to Treasury. The DA takes some of the very little money that they actually need to use for campaigning to garner votes to actually make a difference in our communities. And very often you see our ward councillors doing things which municipal officials must do. But we are so desperate to provide some level of service delivery to our communities that we will do whatever it takes. And therefore, you'll see me so often doing road markings, painting road markings, cutting trees, mowing lawns, you know, sometimes even fixing some other more important piece of infrastructure, and collaborating with private sector, with private business, to be able to come up with solutions and to fix our infrastructure. And that is very, very important. The one thing I do want to say about my outfit, because everybody says, well, we never see you in a suit. We always see you in shorts.
This is the most presentable I've seen.
Yes, yes. So I just want to say that shorts is a far more affordable.
half the price.
Yeah. What about a
half
fraction?
The material, half the price.
A fraction of the cost that a suit will cost you, and far more comfortable. And I'm enjoying that 300 days of sunshine.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, here we go again.
Yes, here we go. 300 days of sunshine.
So I think it's obviously clear here that you have a plan for Nelson Mandela Metropolitan. I keep on thinking of the university. Mm-hmm. I want to come back to something that you've mentioned in your manifesto, which is the investment council.
Yes.
Jobs is a very important thing right now. I mean, you've mentioned it, the highest unemployment for metros in South Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, what is your plan with the investment council, and why is that so important for that municipality?
So I interrupted myself when I was talking about growing the economy. Mm-hmm. And I started off by saying how important it is to make sure that there's sustainable municipal services, because mm-hmm. No business will invest in a municipality where there's not a sustainable water and electricity supply. So that's very important, and obviously also a good, reliable road infrastructure. And therefore, you need to ensure that you get those basics right, mm-hmm. Because that's what business requires in order mm-hmm. to function. But very importantly, often there's also obstacles to investment. And we find that in Nelson Mandela Bay, in the past, currently, it sometimes takes 2 years to get a town planning amendment or rezoning or subdivision through council. And, you know, that is just totally unacceptable, because how things work is, if you're a business owner and you see that there's an opportunity here to do business and you want to build a warehouse or a factory, you can't submit that application and wait for 2 years. Doesn't work like that in business. Even worse, sometimes we have in Nelson Mandela Bay, we've got factories and warehouses that are built and standing empty, ready to roll, but then they have to wait for up to 6 months to get a three-phase electricity connection from council.
Wow.
Now, that can't be a municipality that is serious about growing the economy. Mm. When you've got that kind of investment, and when unemployment is your biggest challenge, you need to roll out the red carpet for investors and for business owners, make it as attractive and easy to invest in your municipality as possible. So the investment council is actually something that I established when we were in government in 2022, and it basically offered the business owners or developers that had problems or blockages in the administration opportunity to appear before the mayor and the entire senior management of the municipality. So, for example, Carabo, you say that, listen, my town planning amendment has been stuck because my site development plan hasn't been approved for the past 6 months. You come and appear before that committee and you state your case, and the mayor who chairs then says, okay, well, I want to hear from this executive director, why has that site development plan? What's the holdup? Tell us, because we want to fix it here, because we want to get that application through. And we did that and launched that in 2022. Mm. And after we were asked it, it never sat again.
Yeah.
And that is so, so important.
That's
because
like
in our city...
Yeah. But I mean, can I just play devil's advocate for a second? If you look at the north of your municipality, there's a lot of crime. You know, people are unemployed. There's gangsterism is running rife there. What is your response as the mayoral candidate for the DA to a statement like that?
Mm. Well, you know, I think I should start by saying that on the day, just before we were asked it, there was a petition by 3,000 residents out of Ward 45, Area 11, who petitioned, and this is a mainly Khoza-speaking community, and they petitioned that I must not be removed as a mayor.
Sure.
And the day that I was removed, they actually had a protest and closed down the Rocklands Road in protest of the fact that I was removed.
Sure.
Why? Because the first time I came there, I visited them. I was shocked. I couldn't believe that in a metro municipality, we had people that have almost no access to potable water.
Wow.
And I made a commitment, and it wasn't just water, it was also proper sanitation. There was no sanitation, and it was also electricity. So I said, well, the water is the serious, most serious issue. We're going to sort that out. We'll be back within the next couple of days to come and see whether the municipality did that. Came back to inspect whether the at that stage water tanks have been installed, which was a temporary solution. And so we made progress. I said, what's next? Sanitation. There can't be a community of a couple of thousand people that haven't got any access to sanitation. Sure. I mean, chemical toilets and those type of sanitation solutions, not a real dignified solution for people, but it's at least something. And I said, okay, well,
in
look.
In the meantime, while you're working towards getting permanent,
So I said, well, there's nothing at the moment. We can do this. Give us a week or so, or a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, I think, and we will return to see if it's been done. Came back to that community. We built trust, not just me. I took the officials with me and made sure that we rebuilt the trust between a community that was neglected and before and now was getting attention from government. There were many of those examples. I visited so many of our 120-odd informal settlements that we have in Nelson Mandela Bay. And in many, many communities, we had similar issues. The fact that there might have been a piped water connected to that community, but it hasn't been working for 2 or 3 months, and nobody, notwithstanding the fact it was reported, nobody bothered to go out. And it only took a service delivery protest for the municipality then to start saying, oh, we're sorry that we haven't put that in place, we haven't fixed it, we'll fix it now. And I said to the municipality that what we need to be doing, especially in informal settlements, is also try and be proactive. We've got a massive housing crisis in Nelson Mandela Bay. There's an estimated 50,000 housing unit backlog in Nelson Mandela Bay. So there's a lot of informal settlements. There's a lot of informal houses. But we have a duty as government to ensure that although we might not be able to build houses as rapidly as we want to ensure that informal settlements are upgraded and have got services so that people living there at least have some dignity. And we set out and did that. There's another informal settlement called Bayland, which is very close to my heart. It's also one of the biggest informal settlements. And I want to tell you, living the conditions that I saw in Bayland, you cannot imagine how people live in those conditions. And and I visit them very often, and whilst I was a mayor, I've also been visiting them afterwards to try and see whether the progress that we started at that stage is actually continuing. Sadly, as was with the rest of Nelson Mandela Bay, our progress in informal settlements has also stalled and was undone. So to answer your question, I think that you can't mislead the public. People can see through leaders. They can see whether they're sincere. We proved that the mayor's office and the mayoral committee delivered to all and were accessible to all. And that each and every resident, whether you were living in Motherwell or whether you were living in Karicha, whether you were living in the northern areas or whether you're living in Summerstrand, their complaints mattered to us, and we wanted to make a difference.
You know, when this kind of conversation touches me, particularly about political leaders and the DA in particular, because I keep saying, for me, it's you have had before your time in Nelson Mandela Bay about 28, 29 years roughly of ANC black rule. Oppressing black communities, where you had mayors that really didn't care about the communities that you're speaking for, that are their people, right? And then in 1 year, 2 years, he goes there and he makes the little change that he could with the resources that he had, but he put them where his mouth is and delivered. And for me, I always say, it's not a racial thing. It's not about whether a black, a colored, or a white person cares more for which demographic. It's a human thing.
Yeah, because I mean, the DA cares.
It's a human thing. And for me, I'm hearing you that when you care about human beings, your actions show all the time.
Yeah.
And that for me is what inspires me about people like you, knowing that we have leaders who really just care about the quality of other people's lives. It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter who gave birth to you. It doesn't matter which kind of ancestor you recognize, whether you recognize ancestors or angels.
Yeah.
But because you're human, you deserve the dignity of water running through your taps, of living in a house that is dignified, and the dignity of going to take a dump and the ability to flush.
Well, I think that I've personally always thought that there's only two types of people, a good person or a bad person. And you have a choice. You can either be a good human being or you can be a bad human being. And I think that when you get that tremendous honor to service your community, and it can be as a ward councillor or it can be as a mayor, I think that you must use that honor to make a lasting difference in people's life. Imagine being elected to a position, to put up your hand to say that I want to represent my community. And you go into that office, but you make no difference at all. Or life is even worse than what you found it. What an utter failure you are as a leader.
And
I think that that, you know, as I've said, people can see through leaders with dubious agendas. And I've seen it when I went into communities and I was attacked by the ANC and some of their structures. Community members just say, no.
To hell with politics here now. Yeah.
Leave the politics out of it. This is the mayor and he is coming to assist us in this community. And I think that is very, very important.
And to do a lot of what we've spoken about today brings us back to a really powerful point that we're all driving, and that is jobs and growth. Because to achieve a lot of this, achieve jobs and growth, we really need to change things. Now, my experience in Nelson Mandela Bay is that the public transport has always been problematic. And if you want jobs and growth, especially in an area, you've got 1.3 million people, you've got people who live outside the boundaries of the city. What is the situation with the public transport at the moment, and what is your plan
for
that?
So I think that I always use a short little sentence where I say, we have to grow us out of this unemployment and poverty mess. We have to grow the economy. That's the only way we're going to get out of this unemployment and poverty mess. There's no other way. And public transportation is key to achieving that, because we know that with apartheid spatial planning, people were put on the periphery of our municipalities. And sometimes it's the poorest people that have to use proportional to their income, most of their salary to be able to get to the work, to their works, if they're lucky enough to have a job. And we've had a public transportation system which is called the IPTS, the Integrated Public Transport System, and it cost the city in excess of about 4 billion rand. In actual fact, it was actually paid for by my national government, most of it. And it's been limping along, and we launched it when we were in government and the DA was in government in 2016, we launched that service after the buses had been acquired 8 years earlier. And after the DA and its coalition partners, after 2 years, were ousted, the system deteriorated, and again it came to a grinding halt. And later on, it was relaunched. And when we were in government now in 2022, 2023, we had a record number of passengers, which is still Mickey Mouse numbers compared to the city of Cape Town with my city. But we had 1.1 million people on those buses. And I went for a trip myself, and we realized that there were some problems with the system that needs to be fixed, but it was transporting people. Then we were asked it. And that bus system came to a grinding halt.
Sure.
And for more than 6 months, the buses were grounded. They did not function at all. And they've subsequently relaunched the system. But there are only about a quarter of all the buses on the road, which means that they're making no difference to the people that they're supposed to be servicing. And they're also so unreliable that people would rather go with traditional taxis or Algoa Bus Company in Nelson Mandela Bay than they would go with the IPTS. And that's a real problem, because if you want a growing city, and you've got a growing workforce, you need to have reliable transport, public transportation. And no public transportation system in the world is not subsidized by government. It has to be subsidized by government. But you can't keep throwing money at a system that's bleeding and is not beneficial to the community. Mm. So in Nelson Mandela Bay, it's very important for us to get the IPTS bus system fixed. Mm. And it must become more reliable, and it must be rolled out to other communities as well. Mm. It is very, very important that you have a reliable public transportation system. And we've seen that even in smaller municipalities like George, they also have a BRT system, an integrated bus transport system. Go George. And their numbers of passengers that they are transferring every month far exceeds exponentially so, Nelson Mandela Bay. And that's for a small city like George.
So you are coming back to the people of Nelson Mandela Bay saying, I and the Democratic Alliance need another shot, but an outright shot at changing your lives. What does that look like? So to a person who knows nothing other than poverty and the destruction and the lack of service delivery that has characterized Nelson Mandela Bay's style of government for the long time. What are the key KPIs that you are giving as an offer to the people of Nelson Mandela Bay?
Well, I think that first of all, if you're lucky enough to be able to afford a car, if you buy a car, you take it for a test drive. Well, Nelson Mandela Bay residents have taken me for a test drive.
I love it. 8 months. I love that analogy.
And we brought them an unqualified audit, and they could see that we're making progress. Now, we want to ensure that we continue with that progress. In fact, I believe that progress has been undone and that we're actually far worse off now. But we've seen the likes of the ANC coalition partners and how they have ruined our city, how they've squandered our money. Mm. And the reality is that what we need now is not another flimsy coalition. Mm. We need a DA government that has proven that we can govern and deliver services to all, to bring stability to council, to be able to appoint the right officials, to be able to hold those officials to account, to be able to ensure that we get service delivery moving in the right direction. Mm. That means reliable water and dignified sanitation solutions. Mm. That means making sure that we have streetlights that function. Mm-hmm. There's currently 10,000 streetlights in Nelson Mandela Bay that's not functioning because there hasn't been a contract in place for nearly 18 months. And roads that's not riddled with potholes. We need to be able to come up with proper housing solutions for our city, for all of those people that might not be able to have dignified housing. The ANC has got an obsession with RDP top structures. Now, RDP housing delivery is very important. You need to build those houses, spend all of the money, and don't send it back to National Treasury. Mm. But it can't be your only housing solution. Sure. You also need to be able to partner up with the private sector and be able to make land available for gap housing solutions. There are thousands of people that can't qualify for the RDP house, but they can't afford a bond either. What happens to them? They stay in backyard shacks, so they stay with their parents because they cannot afford to get a house. Government needs to step in and partner with private sector and say to them, listen, here is a piece of land. You develop the, you develop these property at these are the sale prices or rental stock that we are wanting to provide to the community. We've got access to FLIS funding, which should be used, and it gives people a dignity. You look at other options, for example, the fact that when you go to somebody and you say, we can't necessarily give you a house now. Do you want us to upgrade the services in the informal settlement? They'll tell you, no, we want the house. And anybody can understand it. But what if you tell that person you might only get a house in 15 years, according to the funding that's coming? It's a no-brainer. They're going to say, we want a road. We want our own tap. We want our own toilet. We want an electricity connection. Upgrade the informal settlement now. That doesn't happen in Nelson Mandela Bay. We don't upgrade, the municipality in Nelson Mandela Bay don't upgrade informal settlements. It happens right here in the city of Cape Town. I know, because the reality of inequality is also an issue. There's not enough money to build enough houses immediately. So what do? You try and upgrade informal settlements. Doesn't happen in Nelson Mandela Bay. Has to happen. Making service sites available for people to build their own houses. There has to be an entire housing policy suite that's available to people. I know I'm probably going off on a tangent a little bit. But the reality is, it makes me so angry when you are 51 years into a democracy in a metro municipality with so much money that it can't really spend it. They're sending back to Treasury, and the only housing solution that they've got is RDP's top structures, and they don't even spend all that money, they send it back. Is that a government that really cares about people? It's not.
And there is the passion that's going to sweep this man up to town hall and in the main seat. I mean, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. If you want to take your car analogy a little bit further, Retief, and this is for free. You don't have to.
A free car, right?
It's when you have a car, all right, that is, let's call it the Metro is now a car, and it has a flat tire. Okay. Under Retief, he will look at that and say, okay, let's fix what's broken. The flat tire is broken. Let's fix that so it's the same as the others. Whereas the ANC look at that flat tire and say, you know what? Let's deflate the other three. Then it's all the same. So, you know, you're there to take it forward. And and you also know from experience that this isn't a one-man job. This is a whole of society approach.
Absolutely.
And what is your take on this whole of society approach? How do you bring it all to happen?
So I always say that in most of our municipalities across the country, there has been a brain drain, especially in the municipalities where there were unstable councils, because no professional person wants to work in a place where there's chaos. And therefore you've seen in Nelson Mandela Bay this brain drain. And when we were in government, we actually put in place a memorandum of understanding with the business chamber, which gave them, which made a formal arrangement with them, so they could work on projects with us and be able to fix infrastructure almost on behalf of the municipality if the municipality were unable to do so. Because there's this brain drain out of government, and we know that there's so many skills in the private sector, it is an absolute no-brainer to work together in order to find solutions to our problems. The fact of the matter is that very often, or mostly, your businesses that are invested in your municipality, they care about that municipality. They've invested there. They want it to function. Their residents live there. The management live there. They want it to function. So it's in their best interest to find solutions with the municipality. And therefore, we saw that assisted us as well when we governed, when I often picked up the phone and say, listen, I needed advice to an engineer and just to be able to also provide proper oversight over what the municipality is doing. So that is integral to the success of any broken municipality, collaboration with a civic society and a whole of society approach. If we are serious about changing the fortunes of this country, If we want to fix this country, if we want to get it working again, mm-hmm. we have to roll up our sleeves, all of us, whether you're politician or whether you're civic society, and we have to get stuck in. I always say, are you going to, whenever I try and recruit more people to come and help on a Saturday to fix potholes or clean up, I always say, are you going to allow your street, your neighborhood, your community to go to rack and ruin just because you've had an incompetent municipality? No.
Yeah.
You take matters into your own hands, and that's how we're going to get Nelson Mandela Bay, but more importantly also the country working again.
Retief for awesome. Mayor.
Quick quiz. Just one quick answers from you.
Yeah.
Favorite meal.
Favorite meal? Poiki.
Favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite provincial rugby team?
Oh, Province.
And that's quite sad because in the case of provincial rugby, I mean, at one point, the Eastern Cape was right up there, and not anymore. So you stick to Province. You've got a couple of cheaters around the table here. We back the cheaters all the way. But a final word from you. What can you say to all the residents of Nelson Mandela Bay, and wider than that, as to where are you going?
Well, I just want to say that we've got an amazing country, and we all know the potential. Unfortunately, it's been bedeviled by politicians that wanted to do things for their own dubious agendas. That has undone a lot of the good work that was done by politicians in our democracy. I mean, 25 years ago, South Africa was a different place than to what it is now. We remember the golden years of Madiba. We remember the early years of Mbeki. And sadly, we have seen how an irresponsible, corrupt organization like the ANC today only has their own interest at heart. They don't care about the people of South Africa.
Yeah.
So we need a new government in each and every municipality where we've got failed municipalities. And we can only get there if we vote for change. We've got a proven track record of delivery, and I've said it often, we're not perfect.
Yeah.
But where we govern, we get results.
Yeah.
And therefore, the DA deserves to get the support to bring the necessary change to your municipality. And in Nelson Mandela Bay, I just want to say that that city has got so much potential.
Yeah.
It is going to be the next big thing in South Africa. It's a two-port city. It's got 300 days of sunshine.
It's a wonderful climate.
It's an affordable city. Yeah. And, you know, it's got well-developed infrastructure. And by the way, it is not as bankrupt as all the other broken metros are across the city. We still have a window of opportunity there to save Nelson Mandela Bay. We're going to do it. We're going to do it with an outright majority, and I won't stop until we get that outright majority, because Nelson Mandela Bay deserves better. We need to get Nelson Mandela Bay working again.
You heard it here.
You've heard it here, absolutely. Yeah. And let me say, you know, all the best for your campaign. We know that you're going to be our Dix Mayor in NMB. You've very clearly have a plan for service delivery, improving it, making sure that the public transport system can work, safer communities, and I think overall making sure that jobs drives the economic growth for that municipality and metropolitan, so that people can go to work, put food on the tables, and live dignified lives. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And looking forward to seeing you become the mayor.
Yeah. Awesome. Shout out to Ruti.